Hello and welcome to another edition of the Best of Mornings with Matt White right here on SEN. Suncorp Stadium General Manager Alan Graham spoke about how they would be ready to host this year's NRL Grand Final.
We've got to move on because Alan Graham is on the phone with us, the General Manager at Suncorp Stadium, on yet another issue. Alan, good morning to you. Thank you for your time. Want to talk to you about the Grand Final. Now, obviously, we're sort of in a bit of a holding pattern at the moment, but if it does turn out that Suncorp is put forward as the venue for the Grand Final, I'm sure that you guys say we're ready to go.
Yeah, look, we definitely are, but you know, I'm not sure where all that's going to head. There's obviously still a lot more discussions to go on between the NRL and the New South Wales government. So, you know, we haven't been contacted at all. But if it did work out that way, we'd be definitely ready to rock and roll.
So no contact between you and the NRL in particular?
No, not at this stage. As I said, I think there's still, based on what I'm reading, you know, there's still some discussions to proceed there. So, you know, I guess we'll wait and see what happens with those and where the NRL end up going with the Grand Final.
It's interesting, Alan, because when you sort of look at it, we get caught up in the cut and thrust of rugby league, and we talk about finals are just around the corner. The Grand Final's only 6 or 7 weeks away, so if things went pear-shaped with the discussions between New South Wales government and the NRL, you wouldn't have a lot of lead-in time. But the way that you guys operate up there, and of course the fan base that you've got up there, tickets wouldn't be a problem. How much lead-in time do you need to activate a plan like that if it did fall that way?
Look, we often have to put events on very quickly, as a lot of stadiums do around the country. I think one of the benefits we've got from a grand final point of view is that we come off fresh from the grand final last year. So we've got a template and a blueprint there already. So, you know, there wouldn't be a lot of work required to dust all that off and get it ready for this year if it were to happen. So, you know, we can do that in, you know, in a matter of days and turn all that around in a week without any problems at all.
What do you reckon you learnt from last year's decider and the way that played out for you? It's not as though it's the first big sporting event, major sporting event you've had in your own backyard, but it is a grand final of the NRL. So were there any learnings from there that you put in a little black book and said, hey, next time this happens, these are the things that we need to get on top of?
Look, there wasn't anything significant. You know, we've got a great relationship with the NRL. We've had the benefit of doing Magic Round for a number of years now. And the grand final, to a certain degree, was just you know, a slight modification to the sort of things that they did or they do during Magic Round. So, you know, we're used to working with them, and a lot of the activations that they like to put out. And you know, from our point of view, it was reasonably seamless. And you know, we didn't have any major issues. You know, certainly, like I said, we've got the blueprint there, so you know, it's not going to take a lot of tweaking to get it back up and running if we had to for this year.
So I guess in a nutshell, we can safely say no discussions between yourself and the NRL about a grand final possibility at Suncorp. However, if they did come to you as late as, you know, what, a week before, you reckon you'd be ready to flick the switch?
Oh, absolutely, mate.
Wow. How's the ground itself, mate? You've got the Bronx and Knights on Saturday night and another long season coming towards the back end. How's the stadium looking? How's the surface looking?
Oh, the surface is looking sensational. You know, given the amount of work that it's had this year, if you go back to Magic Round when we had all that rain and all that activity over the 3 days of Magic Round, and we've had some very heavy periods since then. It was only last month we had 4 games in a week with Origin, the Rugby Test, the Broncos, and also the EPL match, and it's come back extremely well. It's looking tremendous, and you know, it'll be ready for fast and furious action on Saturday night.
And just looking ahead to 2023, Alan, is there anything different that you have to do now that you'll have the Dolphins coming in there as well on a regular basis? So how does that change your layout and your planning for next season?
Look, we've obviously got a fair bit of work to do just to plan around that. And the other complication we've got next year is Women's World Cup, which is being played here as well as a number of other stadiums throughout Australia. So there's a reasonably big chunk of the season that's carved out for an exclusive use period for the Women's World Cup. So we're going to have a fair bit of congestion in the NRL prior to that, and then a fair bit straight after. So yeah, it's a fair bit of work to do, but we're pretty comfortable we'll be able to manage that okay.
Yeah, it's amazing, mate. Every time we talk to you, it's incredible how, you know, whether it's a flood or whether it's a busy program, whether it's a grand final that may pop up out of nowhere, you guys are ready to go for it. Appreciate your time, Alan. Enjoy the rest of the season if we don't speak before the end of it. Thanks for your time this morning.
Yeah, thanks very much, Matt. Good to talk to you.
Alan Graham there, the general manager of Suncorp Stadium. So no discussions as yet with the NRL around the possibility of a grand final. However, if those discussions did pop up at the last minute, as Alan said, they're ready to go. They can turn it around in just a few days. So it adds just another layer to this argument that's going on between the ARL Commission, obviously the chair, Peter Volandis, and chief executive of the NRL, Andrew Abdo, met with New South Wales Sport Minister Alistair Henskins on Monday afternoon. By all reports, Brent Reed's report this morning in the Daily Telly that they were impressed with Henskins' knowledge of the detail of the issue, and they are expecting further talks in coming days. The Commission looks to make a call on the grand final by the end of the week, according to Reedy in the paper this morning. So that's the scenario in terms of the grand final, 0457 736 736. Elvis on the text line says, Matty, I'd be happy with a presser where we can hear the questions. Most are inaudible. Yes, well, that's part of the trick, isn't it? We've got microphones there for the coach and captain, or coach and representative player, or player who's representing the club. However, we don't have the pass-around microphone. They mostly do it in AFL. Sometimes we get some in NRL and sometimes we don't. But you're right about that. It's no point hearing the answer if you can't hear the question first. 0457 736 736, 21 after 11, back after this.
The Sydney Morning Herald's Adam Pengilly discussed the NRL plans to start the 2023 NRL season earlier.
But first up, set the alarm, Rugby League. You may be in for the earliest start to a season ever in 2023. Adam Pengilly from the Sydney Morning Herald has the story and he joins us this morning. G'day, Adam.
Morning, Matt. How are you?
Good. It's an interesting article that you've written, and obviously this proposal is on the table. It looks as though the NRL is going to play its longest ever season, like you say, and the earliest start to a season, March the 2nd. Let's pick our way through this. First of all, why the early start?
Yeah, they've got complexities with the draw next year, Matt, with obviously the Dolphins coming in as the 17th team in the competition. So trying to schedule a draw around that, having each team play 24 rounds, has provided a fair few challenges for the NRL. But I think the main reason why they're potentially looking at starting a comp a week earlier is the return to State of Origin on Wednesday night for all three matches. Now, we know that the Rugby League Players Association are lobbying the NRL to have those New South Wales and Queensland players have a mandatory stand-down period and not play for their clubs the following week. I think this might be in response to this, as the NRL sort of saying, OK, well, we'll give each club three buys throughout the course of the season rather than the traditional two, and try and concentrate all those buys around that State of Origin period to allow those players to rest and recuperate from playing Origin. So as a result of that, this proposal has been tabled to a lot of the clubs, saying we're going to start the competition potentially a week earlier, which means it'll move from the second weekend in March to the first weekend in March, and no doubt cause some flow-on effects for the pre-season.
So that's the payoff, isn't it? So what they're trying to do is alleviate the pressure throughout that Origin system, like you say, with the Dolphins coming in. But the payoff is you're going to be starting in the first week of March, if not for the American game that may be on the table in February, and then perhaps the All-Stars game, the start of February, which then backs on to when they finish the season and the amount of time in between the end of this season, especially if you go into the World Cup, and the start of next season. So how are they viewing that payoff from the players' side?
Yeah, I think the players are going to mull this proposal and go back to the NRL and decide which way they want to go with it. But you're exactly right, Matt. The issue this year is going to be the World Cup's not going to finish, I think, till mid or late November, the final we play. And once those players actually come back to Australia and have their annual leave, their mandatory rest period, they're not going to be returning to their clubs until sort of middle or late January next year, which means the pre-season next year is going to be so cramped. I know that the NRL has floated the idea of the All-Stars game going forward to the first weekend in February, in line with the potentially the NRL season itself moving a week forward. Whether that gets some short shrift from the clubs and players remains to be seen. But that pre-season schedule is going to be so hectic next year, Matt, trying to fit in games like the All-Stars fixture, which we know has developed a great following and has produced some really big crowds, and it's a great cultural week for the NRL. Obviously, got the traditional pre-season games like the Charity Shield, which needs to be played, and then straight into the competition itself. And we've got that, as you mentioned, that American game on the back burner there somewhere. Manly has been very keen for a number of years now to try and take a game across to America to play, I suppose, round X, if you put it in those terms, to start a week before the competition actually begins back here in Australia. And the NRL give those teams 2 weeks to fly back to Australia, rest and recover before their next game. So a lot of different moving parts at this stage, Matt.
Is the NRL trying to have its cake and eat it too at the same time here by trying to keep everything early on, trying to jam in that America match, which would be awesome? And like you say, the All-Stars match has been fantastic and has been growing and needs to be there. But it almost seems as though something's got to give. Do you think anything will give?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it will at this stage, mate. It'll be interesting to see how much blowback comes from the clubs and the players. I know there are some clubs who are a little bit concerned about this proposal to, you know, bring forward the start date of the season, having 27 rounds. But I think a lot of people would say, mate, I don't know if you're of the same opinion, that we should probably be looking to maybe shorten the competition rather than stretch it out and extend it by an extra week. Now, it's important to note that the teams will still play the 24 games. Not that they're playing any more games throughout the course of the regular season, but just bringing that start date forward a week just puts more pressure on that, I suppose, summer period and the pre-season fixtures as well. So very soon to see how this plays out with the NRL.
I guess the good part of that, and you mentioned this earlier, is that NRL would therefore be played, especially with Origin going back to Wednesdays, NRL would therefore be played every single weekend. And I'm a believer that any time you stop your competition or park it, you know, in any way, shape or form, it's very hard to get the momentum back. So that'd be probably top of the list for Andrew Abdo and co to say, well, how do we keep our main product consistent all the way throughout the year? And really, it's about the main product and Origin, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, Matty. And I know there's been calls over a number of years now. It's not a new argument, obviously, for the competition to pause for 3 or 4 weeks and play that Origin series back to back to back, which I'm not a massive fan of. I don't believe in that. But you're right. Having those Wednesday night Origins for all three games next year is going to create an issue for the NRL. And what they will do is try and give as many teams a bye as possible either the week before an Origin game or the week after a game. So we'll still have a lot of those split rounds and have, so maybe four games for an NRL round before an Origin game and then maybe 4 games after an Origin round. But I don't know what you think. Well, I've always been a fan of the standalone rep round. Just having that 1 week to allow an Origin to be played interstate at either a Perth or an Adelaide or a Melbourne and allow the Pacific Test to be played as well. And have that 1 week where the whole NRL competition just pauses. We can focus on rep footy for that week, have those test matches, have the second state of Origin game and then get back into the NRL the next week. I know there'll be some people who won't agree with that, but I thought that was quite a nice mix that we had going for the last few years, Matt.
Yeah, and there's another point to this if you sort of raise that and you go towards the end of the season again. If we go towards the end of 2023, now, Webby raised on this program the fact that the NRL was considering looking at an international round after the NRL season had finished. So we get to October and basically we soak up all of October with the international round being played there, which is a great idea. But when we look at this schedule, by the time they get to the end of 2023, Adam, under this schedule, there won't be room for anything.
Yeah, they're still looking at potentially playing that international window, Matt. You're right. And in particular, the Kiwis, New Zealand, are looking at doing a tour potentially to the UK and France and playing several test matches over there. And we do need to grow international footy. I think it's the biggest growth product and the potential for the game to expand of all the different products we've got. So I think we need to keep working on that. And I know the NRL do want to discuss options for that. But again, if you're moving the season forward and starting a week earlier, it's just putting more and more stress on the fixturing and the schedule, more and more, potentially more stress on the players having to start their pre-season a little bit earlier than what they're having in the past. So I don't know what the solution is, Matt, but there's going to be a lot of debate happening around the game in the next week or two.
I'm looking at all this and I'm seeing is a jam-packed schedule and the players being asked to do more. Start earlier, finish later, have less training time, start in the middle of summer, etc., etc., etc. So what I'm seeing here is not only a busy schedule, but more power going to the players. Do you think that the players will start to look at their contracts perhaps going, well, okay, we can now have our say as to when we think we should be able to turn up to training within, you know, within the right circumstances or when we should be able to play trial matches, etc. Do you think that this kind of proposal opens up the opportunity for players and player managers especially to have more say in how they structure their year?
Yeah, I've got absolutely no doubt, mate, Matt. The players will leverage that and try and use that as an argument when they go back to the NRL with this to answer this proposal. And if you remember correctly, back to the start of this year, we had a number of players pulled out of All-Stars game. I think Cody Walker was chief among them. I don't think Jack Whiten played, purely citing the fact that they didn't have enough miles in their legs in pre-season so far to a standard they thought they could play a proper game in that Indigenous and Maori All-Stars fixture. So again, if we're thinking about moving that fixture forward a week to the first week in February, coming off the back of a World Cup year, like, where do we end? Where does it stop? So I don't know how this sort of December, January period, early February period is going to look next year, but it's going to be really, really tight for a lot of clubs about trying to get their players and get them enough miles in the legs, get the grounding into their bodies to be able to start the NRL season, let alone play these pre-season exhibition games we usually have scheduled.
Might have to expand squads.
Well, we don't know, do we, Matty? We've got 30-man squads at the moment. And then we come back to the argument about, have we got enough players to service 17 teams? So it's a never-ending debate, isn't it?
While I've got you, the Ricky Stewart situation, it has been obviously floating along. I find it, it's one of those cases where, you know, personal issues become public issues and it is front and centre in the game. So it's always going to be a difficult one to deal with. Where do you think this is going to land?
Yeah, I think the NRL makes some sort of determination this afternoon, Matt, you'd have to think. They don't want to let it drag on much longer than the next 24 hours, given how it's just dominating the news cycle. There's absolutely no winners at all in this incident, whether it's Ricky Stewart and his family, the Canberra Raiders, Jamin Salmon's family. I think they'd all like it to be put to bed and move past it. I'd imagine the NRL will come down with some sort of sanction this afternoon. I know there's been a lot of talk about suspension on top of a fine as well. I think that will probably be the path the NRL go down without having any, obviously, final clarity on that. So Wayne said what Andrew Abdo and the NRL Integrity comes back with this afternoon. But I just hope everyone's safe, Matt. We can just move on as quickly as possible and get back to concentrating on the footy. Let Jamin play his footy for the Panthers. Let Ricky get back to doing what he needs to do, coaching the Raiders, whether it's this week, next week, in a couple of weeks' time, and have a resolution, have it all sorted out.
And heading into round 22, mate, it's a fascinating part of the season, isn't it? I'm blown away by the structure of the ladder heading into the finals. Obviously, the Panthers have been there all season at the very top and will continue. So who do you reckon is the team most likely? I mean, the Cowboys coming home with a wet sail. The Sharks are there. Don't know about the Storm, although Cameron Munster moving to fullbacks has certainly worked. The Eels, Rabbitohs, Broncos and Roosters are our top eight. Who do you think is the team most likely to challenge the Panthers, if they're the team to challenge, in your opinion, by the time we get to the end?
Yeah, very good question, Matty. I think you need to finish in the top four to be a realistic threat to try and win the comp. And I know they've been hot and cold all year and they've had some fantastic performance and really bad performance. I still think Parramatta have got something to offer in this competition. I really do. I'd put a caveat on that by saying I think they need to try and sneak into the top four if they're going to be able to do that. Sorry, Matt, but we've seen this year they've beaten Melbourne away from home. They've beaten Penrith twice, both home and away. The ability is there. It's just a matter of trying to switch it on and be consistent from a week-to-week basis. They seem relatively healthy to me. They'll get Mitch Moses back in the next couple of weeks playing halfback. Clint Gutherson's healthy. Dylan Brown's playing in some of the form of his life. And that forward pack on their day are as good as anything in the competition. So I still respect the South and the Roosters can do some damage from the bottom half of the top eight, but I think Parramatta might be the team to challenge Penrith when the whips are cracking.
Yeah, we might find out more about that on Friday when they face the Bunnies. Good on you, Adam. Appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks, Matt. Have a good day, mate.
Anthony Seibold discussed Ricky Stewart's suspension and how it will affect their match this weekend against the Dragons.
Wow, there's a fair bit for us to talk about. So, obviously, as a man who's coached at the highest level in this game at the NRL, you're well and truly aware with how the press conference scenario plays out. I just want your thoughts, first of all, on the unprecedented one-week ban. It doesn't sound like a lot, but you're taking a head coach out of action completely for 1 week, plus $25,000 out of the skyrocket. What was your reaction to that?
Yeah, well, you know, some people have said it's a heavy price to pay and others have said that potentially it's too lenient. Look, I think in some ways the NRL have got this right. I think, you know, the way listening to Don Ferner speak on behalf of the Raiders yesterday, they were comfortable with taking on any sanctions from the NRL. You know, Ricky Stewart's come out and apologised, but I've also got great empathy for the situation as well. It's, you know, Jamin Salmon and his family would be, you know, obviously quite hurt with the comments, but also from what I understand, there's a historical sort of situation there that Ricky commented on. And one thing I do know is you are quite emotional at the end of a game, particularly when you lose and your side doesn't perform great. So, you know, going into the press conference, in a lot of ways, you don't have or you haven't had time to really collect your thoughts because it is, for people, you know, listening, you don't get a lot of time between the end of the game, talking to your team, and pretty much you're straight out the door to the press conference. So it is quite soon after a game. So there's a lot of emotions involved.
Yeah, and I think everyone understands that, Siebs, but I guess the
point of difference about this one is that it was a publicly NRL-sanctioned forum, essentially, and Ricky's there as the head coach representing his both his club and, essentially, in some ways, the game. So there was something very personal here that came out that normally wouldn't come out in that scenario. But take us a step back. You finish your game, you get to the press conference. Do you have any time to say, and this is completely separate to what Ricky would have gone through with Elliot Whitehead sitting there, but do you have any time to say to your captain, okay, we're going to try and get this message across, or is there any planning that you can do going into that situation?
Not a lot, to be fair, Matty. What happens is the media manager of your club will come and grab you, and often he'll give you maybe a heads up on potential questions that the media might ask. And you generally do that walking down the hallway, you know, from the change room to where the media conference is. So there's not a lot of time. Often it's only sort of 1 or 2 minutes. And in my experience, at both South Sydney and the Broncos, the media manager would potentially, you know, give me some topics, essentially, you know, of what, you know, the journalist would be asking. So there's not a lot of time. There's not a lot of time. And you certainly don't get time to brief your captain. He's just listening like yourself. And, you know, the media manager's in the room. But, you know, as I said, emotions are mixed at times, particularly if you've lost a game or you've lost a couple on the trot or you've lost a really big game or an important game. So, yeah, it's quite challenging for the coaches. But I also understand that you need to work within NRL guidelines and, you know, public commentary like that. Yeah, they've seen fit to sanction that.
In terms of the 1 week penalty in particular, I was told ages ago when, you know, there were some players who were constantly doing the wrong thing, and somebody said to me, you know, fines are fines are fines, but you got to take the thing off them that matters the most. And in a player's position, take the jersey away from them, take the ability for them to play. And that's why we see players suspended, and that hurts. But we're now seeing a coach suspended. So talk to me what you think that effect has on. To the layman, 1 week doesn't sound like much. But for somebody like Ricky, somebody like yourself, to have no contact whatsoever with your football team for a week, is that the thing that's going to hurt the most?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. That's what will, you know, be hurting Ricky. You know, he's obviously a very proud coach who's coached a whole heap of games at four different NRL clubs now. And, you know, not being able to go and spend the week preparing, you know, the playing group would be, you know, really challenging for him, I would have thought. Now, the thing is, they've got assistant coaches there like Andrew McFadden, Brett White. Those types of guys will take the reins this week. But, you know, not having contact with the playing group, the senior players and, you know, the coaching staff that you work very closely with every single day, Matty, will certainly hurt Ricky. And my way of thinking, that probably hurts more than, you know, I would expect that would hurt more than the fine itself.
Well, a lot of people say that Ricky, you know, and they've have the number of the amount of dollars he's been fined over the course of his career, and that's part of the allure of Ricky, isn't it? We love the fact that he wears his heart on his sleeve. But a lot of people are saying that those numbers, those penalties haven't been a deterrent for somebody like Ricky. So if you come out and say this, you instantly know that you shouldn't have said it in that forum. Perhaps he's not going to back away from what he said, but in that forum, do you think then with the one-match ban that would deter somebody like Ricky from doing that again, and that would put other coaches on notice not to cross the line that the NRL sees is a line?
Well, I think, you know, this will act as a deterrent, particularly talking or criticising players or public figures within the game, you know, publicly. I think it will be a deterrent. I don't think you can group the other fines that Ricky's had to pay or other coaches have had to pay and group it in with this one. I think this is a little bit different. You know, often in the past, there's been criticism of referees or decisions, you know, from officials within the game. You know, this isn't grouped in with that. So, look, I think the NRL have got it right in some ways. I think, you know, Ricky and also the Canberra Raiders have showed some contrition. And I think, you know, it's been a talking point for a few days and probably will be, particularly with the importance of the Canberra Raiders game this weekend. You know, they're still fighting away for, you know, that eighth position in the playoffs, and I think that's what will hurt Ricky Stewart the most, that he won't be there with the playing group preparing during the week, and you know, I suppose, you know, working closely with his staff as well, you know, and that'll probably hurt.
I'm trying to think, Siebes, did you cop a fine? Did you cop a big one in your time at South or the Bronx?
No, I didn't. No, thankfully.
Oh, you're a goody two-shoes.
Yeah, no, I got frustrated a few times, Matty, but no, I didn't. Look, Yeah, as I said, look, emotions take over at times, you know, particularly straight after a game, and particularly when, and you know, we all know this, like the post-match press conferences, you know, what journalists are trying to do is get a bit of a grab or trying to get a headline so people read articles or listen, and that's their role. You know, the role of the coach is to prepare the group and you know, help the group perform as best as possible or give them the opportunity to perform as best as possible. Now, when that doesn't work out after a game, Matty, you don't understand or appreciate that. Yeah, that's frustrating because your whole week's work goes into that game, that 80 minutes. And so when you lose, or when you lose by a tough decision, like the West Tigers a few weeks ago, I won't say the weeks are waste, but you've invested so much time, so many hours, you know, into that particular preparation. So that's where the frustration comes at different times. And, yeah, no, I didn't get fined, but, yeah, certainly frustrated at different times.
Just a final one on this whole scenario. I guess it does call into question the press conference situation and the way that the media is then put in front. And I think it has to be a two-way street. There has to be some dialogue at the end of a game from coach and captain to the media. That otherwise, you're just shutting the door on everything. So we need that. I was around in the time where you used to be able to go into the dressing rooms and handpick as much as you could, and you know that very well. Do you reckon, and we don't know, we can't speak for Ricky, but do you think that perhaps... that, I mean, would this have happened if journos were still floating around the dressing rooms trying to get a quote anyway? Do you reckon that perhaps the environment might have changed something different? Do we need to look at a different environment for coaches and captains sitting in front of the media, or do we just say it's working now and this is something out of the ordinary?
I think it's working now and this is something out of the ordinary, but I did like the... you know, the days when the journalists would come into to the locker room and grab a player or two, you know, or speak to the assistant coach or the head coach or whatever it was. I did like that. I think it seems very clinical. You know, the press conferences seem very clinical, so to speak. You know what I mean? It's sort of like, you know, you're behind a desk and it's a very formal post-game. Is there another way to do it? I'm not too sure. I think it probably fits what, you know, media organisations want, and probably from a club perspective fits you know, what most clubs would want. But I still think there's a role in the game for, you know, that personal nature of journalists coming into the change rooms after a game, win or lose, you know, grabbing some players for an interview, or even, as I said before, grabbing the coach for an interview. I did like that. I think it was probably a little bit more personal. But I still think there needs to be that sort of formal press conference. And, you know, the timing's probably a bit of an issue, because at times you don't get to enjoy the win, and you certainly still carry some frustration if you lose.
And then off the back of that, the timing is, you know, the media needs it straight away.
That's right. Yeah.
And perhaps we don't get that emotion if we don't get in there straight away.
Bulldogs forward Max King previewed their Round 22 match against the Warriors.
20 minutes after 10, as we know, the Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs are in Auckland to take on the Warriors on Friday night. What a trip it's been. On the line is Doggies forward Max King. G'day, Max.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, great to catch up with you. Talk us through the trip that eventually got you over there to Auckland. It was a long affair.
Yeah, so we landed in last night, or this morning, I should say. So we're in Bundaberg over the weekend versus the Cowboys. So we went from... yesterday, we went from Bundaberg to Brisbane to New Zealand. And there was a couple of delays in between, so I didn't end up getting to the... I didn't put my bags down in the hotel until about 3 o'clock in the morning, New Zealand time. So it was a long day. The boys have been spending a lot of time in each other's pockets. So, no, it's been good to get a bit of bonding time at the airport, you know, and learn a bit more about each other. But... yeah, mate, we had today off, so the boys have just had a sleep in and just cruised around the city and, yeah, just trying to enjoy themselves.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I was going through your stats. I think the third ever first grade game that you played was over there in Mount Smart Stadium against the Warriors. Of course, you were a Gold Coast Titan then. That's back in 2017, and it's been a while since we've managed to jump on planes and go international. So what's it like to have... finally to get to go back to New Zealand and look forward to the Warriors this Friday?
Yeah, you know, it's been good. And, like, I mean, you know, yes, like I said, yesterday was a long day, but, you know, I can't really whinge getting to travel, you know, as my job. And to be here in the city and that, you know, it's good. It's refreshing to be back. I was just saying to the boys, are walking down the main street of Auckland in the CBD, and I swear the same roadworks are still getting built as when I was here 3 years ago. But... yeah, not a lot has changed. But, it's good to be back. And obviously international flying, you know, is been back and has been back for a bit. So, I might even start looking at something off-season-wise, you know, start get my holidays sorted, mate. I start going overseas. It's definitely sort of inspired me coming here and just getting a bit of a sort of refresh.
Yeah, now that you've got the passport back up and running and working again, tell us who's the... I mean, you guys travel, you know, week in and week out. Who do you hang with when you're travelling, and who's the good traveller from the Dogs and who's the pest on the Doggies?
Oh, the good traveller. There's a couple of blokes. There's a couple of blokes that are just pretty low key. Just get by. I was sitting next to Jacko on the flight, so he was just head down into his Sudoku book. We had in-flight entertainment. He didn't want to hear it. He was on the Sudoku book, so he was head down. He's pretty chill. I'd say probably the most annoying would be obviously Fox, for obvious reasons, loud. He's always in everyone in, at the back of the bus or, you know, at the airport. He's all right as a player, but he's always chirping and into the staff, which is quite funny, but probably not as funny for them. And another one would be Luke Thompson. He's just that, like, he's always that guy that wears, you know, those neck cushions?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's a daggy traveller.
He's just like, yeah, he's a daggy traveller. He's like, he's got about 15 books in his bag. He's reading them all at once. He's got that big neck cushion. Like, he didn't take it off. He's the type of dude that wears that. He doesn't wear it on the flight. He wears it all the way through the airport, through customs. he loves to, get it out. So, I don't know. He's a bit like, he's a bit pedantic, you know. He always has to have the exit rows and whatnot. So, I'd also have to throw Luke Thompson in there.
Yeah, nice insight. Your reflection on the game against the Cowboys. You guys were in that match. You're a chance to beat them. They're flying high at the moment. So what did you take away from that 28-14 loss?
Yeah, I mean, they're going well. They're a good side. And, we were in a position to win that game. And I thought we'd just probably got, you know, out enthused towards the end as well. They were flying off the line and giving it to us, and when it was our turn, they were sort of rolling through. So, it's disappointing. You know, they ran away with it in the end, and they put some, like, they ran away comfortably, and we were in a position to win that. So, taking no credit away from them, they're traveling really well, but we were complete and poor. We were, as I said, out enthused, and I just thought it was disappointing because it could have been a really good coup for us, but I think there were signs early on in the game that we were probably missing our objectives early in the game that we would have liked to do better, and even though the scoreline didn't reflect it being 10-0 up, I still think we could have sort of executed and done things better at the start, and it might have helped us down the track, for later in the game. But short turnaround this week, on to New Zealand on Friday, so we've all had our sort of review and had a look at what we need to sort of improve on, and just build it into this week.
Hey Max, does it feel like this is a different season within a season for you guys? I mean, it was such a tough start to the year and everything that was going on early, and then there's the changeover and Mick Potter takes over. And in the last seven rounds, you've won four matches there. So does it feel like there's been an entire shift at the Doggies? And it must feel like all that drama that was going on was so far back that now you can start to look ahead. Is that what it feels like for you?
Yeah, it is a bit like that. It's so strange, everything that happened, with Baz, resigning and leaving that. Like, I mean, I've been unfortunately at clubs where that's happened, like, a couple of times. Yeah. But it was the fact that it was so early in the season. And you're right, it was like round 9 or 10 or something. I was like, wow, we're not even halfway. It's going to be a long year. And I think that was one thing as well. We didn't want it just to be like, oh, right, okay, well, the year's done. So we'll, the year's finished. We'll kick the feet up, and it is what it is. Whatever the scoreline is, it is what it is, for the rest of the year, because that's, you know, you got fans and members turning up every week, and you know, we wanted to obviously still build like into the team we wanted to be. And yeah, Mick's come in and done a great job. And it does feel like, you know, the boys have had a reaction, you know, and a shift. And, you know, it feels like we are building. But, you know, on the weekend was a great example of, you know, they're a quality side. And, you know, it's just that difference between us and the quality sides at the moment. You know, just that intensity and really, really like stick it. You know, there's a sort of, there's a jump in between those levels of, you know, being a big team, you know, getting big team wins and, you know, like just maybe, you know, beating other teams that are similar on the ladder to you. So I think, you know, there's still obviously a lot of improvement to go. And I think that's a priority at the moment, is just keep building every week. And yeah, you know, hopefully you build the 2023 and become, you know, as the Cowboys have done this year. You know, I don't think anyone's seen them how they went this year. I don't think anyone forecasted that, you know, and they've really turned things around. And I think that's a bit of motivation for us, because, you know, we want to sort of put the club back where it belongs, in that powerhouse group of clubs. And yeah, everyone just wants to build towards that.
100%. I mean, the Cowboys are probably a good template to go off. And looking to 2023, then you don't know at the moment who's going to be head coach, but the way that Mick Potter's slotted in and you guys have responded, and he said, look, if we're going to go around again, I'm up for it. Would you guys, and yourself in particular, be up for Mick Potter to continue full time?
Yeah, for sure. I think he's been a great addition. And the boys really love him as well. Like, he's... He's like, I don't know, there's two sides of him. And like, he knows his footy, and obviously he's played his footy. But he's also like sort of an old fella that like gets in and has a laugh with the boys as well. So he's fitting really well. The boys really enjoy him, and I'd love to see him hang around, you know, the way he's going. You know, he could go to main gig somewhere else. But, you know, I'd love to see him stay at the club. And, yeah, hopefully be a part of what we're building.
It's been a great turnaround. Hey, listen, thanks for your time. Enjoy over there. It's going to be a different experience this time around. They've been starved of their footy, as we know. So they're going to be tough opponents, the Warriors, but you've been putting in the hard yards, especially over those, you know, four wins over the last 7 weeks. It's been a great back end of the season. Good on you, Max, and best of luck on Friday.
Good on you. Thanks, Matt. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Plus, Rugby League Players Association CEO Clint Newton discussed a range of issues currently facing the NRL with Maddie.
Budgie Bulldogs sent us a text off the back of my chat with Max over there in Auckland. Maddie, just want to give Max King a rap. I go to most Bulldogs games, let my kids hang back for signatures, and notice that Max stays around for the longest with the fans and the kids. Good on you, Budgie Bulldog. It was great to have a chat to him. Just one of the fine young players that we've got, in the game right now. The man who represents the players, the CEO of the Rugby League Players Association, Clint Newton, has joined us on the morning show. G'day, Clint.
Morning, Matt.
Been nice and busy in your world over the last couple of weeks, mate. You had a fair bit going across your desk.
Could say the last 3 years, Matt, really, couldn't you? the game is continues to deliver first of its kind, but anyway, we just sort of, you've got to get on with it, don't you? So outside of the odd thing here or there, the game's going great, and we've obviously got a fantastic NRLW season that kicks off very soon as well. So there's lots to be positive about too.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, just, you would have heard that text that was read out there. I mean, rugby league has a history of focusing on the drama and the controversy, but as you well know, there's a million kind of texts that we could get like that about somebody like Max King and a whole stack of other players who put in the effort to make it for the fans. So it's always swings and roundabouts in this game, but there is always something for us to talk about on the controversial side. And obviously what's happened with Ricky Stewart from a coaching perspective is something a little bit out of your realm, I guess, as Rugby League Players Association CEO, but there was a player involved in this one, in Jamin Salmon. Can you tell us how it's played out from your side there in terms of interaction with the player involved in this and what you made of the punishment from the NRL?
Yeah, what I will say is the matter has obviously been dealt with by the NRL, and you know it's obviously a very personal nature. So I don't think there's anything, you know, there's no benefit in adding my opinion to, I suppose, what's gone on. But what I can say is that we've, you know, been in contact with Jamin, you know, on the Saturday night, let him know that we were obviously available, you know, support him, and we're making sure he knows that the association is there for him, as we are for all players. I've obviously reached out to, you know, also Ricky Stewart. I consider Ricky a friend. I've known him for a long period of time. So we've done that. But the only comment I will make, I would suggest, is that, you know, I think everyone recognises that post-match press conferences aren't the place for these types of comments. But I also don't think, you know, the pile-on has helped anyone either. So I think it's been dealt with. The player knows that we're there to support him through it, however he feels necessary, and then we can just all move on.
Yeah, fair statements. Well said, Clint. Can I just ask you, when you reach out to a player in this scenario, when you reach out to Jamin in particular, what do you say to them? What do you offer them in terms of professional and support and the assistance that they may need? Some may take it up, some may not. But what are you offering them?
Yeah, well, it's always player choice, right, Matt? I mean, we're certainly not going to force anything on a player. We've got a fantastic player operations team that are, you know, deeply connected to the playing group, both in the men's and the women's space. So they're really the conduit between myself and the playing group, and they get to work straight away. They let them know, you know, both the personal and confidential advice and guidance that is available to them. Obviously, every club has their wellbeing, you know, managers available, as well as psych support. But again, it really comes down to what does the player need, and that's going to be based on individual circumstances and how that player feels at the time or later on down the line. You know, because sometimes these things or other matters have a tail on them. So we've just got to make sure that the player knows that we're there to support, as well as working with the club and the great work that many clubs do.
Can I ask you about the Isaiah Papali'i situation at the moment? Now, he has a contract with the Tigers starting next year. There's all that talk about should players be able to sign, you know, a year or so out, etc. But I want to focus on the fact that you've got a player here who's not the first, won't be the last, who is having cold feet for whatever reasons, and it appears as though the reasons here are the change in coach, etc. So as a players' association, what's your advice to players like this who sign a deal, get close to enacting the deal, but then start having second thoughts about it? What role do you play in the middle of that?
Yeah, I mean, Isaiah's situation is obviously, a personal one. We've had limited involvement in Isaiah's situation, and what we have told him and his management team is that essentially it's their responsibility to honour the contract and not terminate. But there's obviously been many situations over the course of the last several years, as there will be continually, where there's mutual agreement to terminate. Tigers, by the sounds of it, haven't looked for that. He and his team, you know, are well within their rights, like other workplaces, to request a mutual termination, as is anyone. But that's not to say it should be granted, or it will be. And as it stands, this is really a discussion between the two parties, which is the employee and the employer. And our expectation of players is they honour their contracts, and they're aware of all, but they're also aware of all their rights. But it goes both ways, you know. So our expectation is also clubs honour the contracts that players sign as well. And it's often it's a bit of an unspoken factor that doesn't get brought in publicly. But there's many reasons why a player leaves, and there's been situations where we see people shoulder tapping players as well, which you can't deny that happens. But on this occasion, we again make sure they're aware of their rights, their obligations, and then and are there when required for both club and player.
So at the moment, no role to play or has been played from the RLPA on the Isaiah Papali'i side?
Well, outside of our involvement, obviously, is to say that that they have a responsibility to honour their contract. But then there's a process that they would have to work through And again, they're well within their rights to request a termination. As I said, just like every other employee in this country. But that doesn't mean to say it can be granted, or that there's an expectation that that a request would be accepted. But
it's
again,
like anything, isn't
if that yeah. if that doesn't change, then you turn up for training and you get on with it.
You can always ask. You can always ask, but the answer may not always be yes, and that's across the board. Now, just on the issue of hip drop tackles, you would have heard perhaps Matty Johns here on this network on SEN on Monday said players should be kicked out of the RLPA if they perform hip drop tackles. So players should be knocked out of the conversation if they're doing these tackles, which is clearly a blight on the game. What's your reaction to those statements?
Oh, I mean, like anyone, I mean, everyone's entitled to their opinion. But, I mean, the suggestion that we need to step in and tell players and coaches how to play the game is ridiculous. You know, it's not the role of the association to step into clubland and tell them how to play and what lines to run and what tackles to do or not do. There's also, there's an assumption that there's intent, to hurt. Now, that's a big call. We're certainly not the moral compass when it comes to, nor should we be, these types of situations. But what the RLPA has done is we were part of the judicial match review before the start of the season. And we had some pretty strong comments back then after it was announced that, and we were one of the only stakeholders in the game to criticise it. In particularly, we didn't support the fine system, especially this year with the introduction of fines for shoulder charges and crusher tackles, which are arguably two of the most dangerous tackles in the game, because we didn't think that players effectively buying their way out of those types of situations was the right approach. But our responsibility to the player doesn't just start and stop with on-field matters. There's a whole range of things in which we're part of. And we've also got a judicial system and a match review committee in place that is well within their rights to hand down various punishments and sanctions as well. So, the RLPA's job is to be part of any review of judicial and match review and ensure the game is as safe as possible for the players to play.
Got a question from one of our listeners on the text line, Clint, from Gavin out in Penrith, said, what is the RLPA's biggest or most important issue that you're having to deal with at the moment? Scheduling, player safety, rule changes, rep allegiance rules. He wants to know, what do you reckon, what's top of your list at the moment in importance or biggest issue that you're going to deal with?
Biggest issue is the CBA delays, I would suggest, Matt. That effectively... it captures all the terms and conditions, payments and benefits and entitlements, insurances and protections for the players, both the NRLW and the NRL players. So, for example, you've got 240 NRLW players right now that have no idea what their terms and conditions are going to be next year. They don't know when their season is. They don't know how much the salary cap is. You've got four new clubs that can't sign any players. So, again, I would suggest that's the... that's the significant boulder that I'd like shifted because effectively that captures a lot of the things that we're talking about. I mean, outside of that, obviously you've got some of the factors connected to scheduling. We've made some comments about the length of next year, particularly moving back to three Wednesday fixtures. But there's also lots of positive things going on too. I mean, again, we've got an outstanding competition at the moment that continues to change. You've got an NRLW, season that's about to kick off. And going back to the judiciary, we've seen a huge decline in charges across the board. So, again, the game is in a good position, hugely financial. Now it's just about making sure that all the stakeholders work together to continue to progress things.
Yeah, you're right. There's a lot on your plate, not just last few weeks, last few years. That CBA, the cornerstone of everything that the players do, obviously. So that's an important one. Appreciate your time this morning. I know it's busy. Good on you, Clint.
No worries, Matty. Always happy to jump on the show and to be given a platform to clarify a few things is great. So have a good day, mate, and forward to two good seasons finishing up this year.
Absolutely. Good on you, Clint. Clint Newton there, the RLPA CEO, 0457 736 736. It's 21:30 after 11.
Thanks for listening to another edition of The Best of Mornings with Matt White. We'll be back Monday morning from 9 a.m.